Today, we'll get an update on COVID in our community with Dr. Dolores Gomez, the Chief Medical Officer at Memorial Medical Center. Dr. Edward Michelson of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso was originally scheduled to be our guest, but he lost his voice. We look forward to rescheduling Dr. Michelson for a future date. In the meantime, you can ask your questions about the current state of COVID in our community on Voice of the Public by calling 575-646-2212. This week, the New Mexico Department of Health announced that it's implementing revised federal guidance surrounding isolation and quarantine for COVID-19. What does that mean for you? We'll cover that and lots of other territory regarding COVID-19 today on Voice of the Public. And we'll get started right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. It's 106 and time for Voice of the Public, our first show of 2022. The new year has arrived and so has Omicron. We'll get an update on COVID in our community from Dr. Dolores Gomez, the Chief Medical Officer at Memorial Medical Center, who was kind enough to step in at the very last minute yesterday when we learned that our guest we had originally scheduled, Dr. Michelson, was under the weather and had actually lost his voice. So it's very hard to do radio when you have lost your voice. And we hope to schedule him back. Hope he's doing well, and he'll be able to join us here in the coming weeks for a Voice of the Public. But Dr. Gomez, again, thank you so much for jumping in there today to save the day.
Thank you again for having me, Casey.
Well, you know, saving the day is something that our medical professionals have been doing now for into our third year with COVID-19. And yesterday, over 3,600 COVID cases were reported in the state and another 36 deaths. And I can't really recall the numbers looking this bad as of yet in this pandemic. What would you say is the state of this pandemic as it is today?
I wish I could say things were moving in a good direction, but it almost feels like a Groundhog Day. If you've seen that movie, you feel like you're just living the same thing over and over again. And you know, I think the thing that's a little bit more bleak right now is the fact that with Omicron that you mentioned, it's not kind of pocketing infections like we were seeing with Delta and even the original COVID-19 wild type virus. It is spreading like wildfire. It is not kind of just pocketing in an area. Because it is so infectious, we're seeing a whole lot more of it. And then I think the second thing that's very different than last year as well is we are seeing a lot more flu this year as compared to last year, I think because we were masking a whole lot more. And I think we were even that much more hyper aware of washing our hands. So now you're not just living with a highly infectious virus, more so than any of the previous variants that we've seen, but we have flu on top of that right now. So it's not great news right now.
Well, and obviously during the onset of the pandemic, there were a lot of closures. Schools were closed and businesses were closed. And so there just weren't as many people congregating in settings like that. So, yeah, it was amazing to see what would happen to the flu virus under those circumstances. And so I think, you know, that the conventional wisdom was, well, when we go back to normal life, which we all want to do, we're going to see the flu come back. And we're not hearing great news about the effectiveness of the flu shot this year. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the flu vaccine in general is you know, when we've tried to tout why it's so important with the COVID vaccine and why it is so effective, because if you have any type of vaccine that gives you 90% efficacy, you know, why wouldn't you get it? The flu has never even been close to that. You know, in a good year, maybe you're about 60%. But by and large, a lot of times we're only seeing 30 to 40% effectiveness of the flu. And a lot of that is because last year we didn't see a lot of it. And your vaccine is based for flu based on your year prior's rates of what you saw. So that's why we're seeing kind of that resurgence of flu. And like you said, we're in indoor environments around each other a whole lot more right now than we were last year.
Maybe you could explain a little bit about what that process is like. Without having a dominant flu strain last year, that made it more difficult for scientists to predict what the dominant flu strain would be this year. How did they determine it? Did they go back to a previous year to make a guess?
Yeah, I think what we've done a lot just in general in medicine and in the hospital setting is you have to rely on your 2019 data and what is out there. So you can't rely on the 2020 data to kind of let you know, because you just don't have the numbers. So again, you go with your best guess in terms of how you're going to bring out that vaccine. And so I think that's why we're seeing a lot more of that flu right now.
And we got a new name this week for, I guess, the combination of flu and coronavirus, Flurona. Are we seeing a lot of cases with people having both viruses at the same time?
We are, in the United States overall. We have not seen a lot of that right now, thus far, at least in Doniana County. But we are seeing people with the flu, and you know, maybe within a few weeks they may end up with COVID or vice versa. Again, you know, your immune status gets affected by any infection that you get, and it's going to make you more susceptible to then getting something else on top of that. And again, with where Omicron is and how infectious it is, it's going to be very easy to see those combinations happening.
Another concerning thing that that we're seeing this week is the increase in the hospitalization rates among children, and especially children under 5 who are not yet eligible for a vaccine. How are kids doing in Doniana County?
Yeah, so we are seeing more kids admitted. Now, a lot of it isn't just related to COVID. Again, it's kind of for the same reason. A lot of these kids were not exposed to the routine viruses that we see. Bronchiolitis, which is related to RSV or respiratory syncytial virus. So we're seeing that. The State Department just put out some information that the amount of COVID cases that are being admitted that are pediatric in nature is at about 17%, which is not even close to what we saw at all last year. You know, we were in the single digits from that standpoint for COVID. Here, at least at Memorial, we've had an uptick in the number of kids, and we're actually getting kids that are coming from El Paso because they are full right now for their pediatric volume. So it may not just be what we're getting here, but again, that support that we've been doing over and over from a hospital standpoint, kind of the shifting of patients and getting them the care that they need because other hospitals are full.
Now, in the fall, we were dealing with that Delta surge, and that seemed to not really end before Omicron showed up. What's your sense at this point? Are most of the people who are suffering from coronavirus suffering from the Omicron variant, or are we still battling a Delta surge?
Yeah, so again, the state just put out some information, and they're still saying that Delta is our predominant virus right now in the state. But again, I don't think that that's going to hold true very long. I think our first case of Omicron that was reported was on December 12th. And if you look at kind of nationwide, when the first cases started happening around December 1st, within a month, it became 90% the predominant virus. And so given that we've started to see it here, I am pretty sure that the Omicron is going to become the dominant variant in the state.
Dr. Dolores Gomez is with us today on Voice of the Public, the Chief Medical Officer at Memorial Medical Center. And 575-646-2212 is the number to call. If you have questions concerning COVID-19 in our community, pick up the phone, be a part of Voice of the Public. If you're listening online, thanks for streaming us, krwg.org, of course, streaming 24/7. And many join us on our Facebook feed. We stream our Zoom meeting on Facebook Live. So thank you for joining us there. You can also leave a comment or question on our Facebook page. This is KC Counts. So glad to have you along this afternoon. Just this week, the New Mexico Department of Health announced that it was implementing revised guidance surrounding isolation and quarantine for COVID-19 based on what the CDC had recommended. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding that initially. And I'm wondering where things have settled for you in terms of the now 5-day quarantine and isolation guidance for certain individuals.
I think I can see where people got very like, you know, why were we doing 10 or 14 and now all of a sudden we're okay with five? I think the important caveat within all of that is that this is in the patient that is asymptomatic. Obviously, the patient that is vaccinated already. And so it's not that we want people to be back and out and about if they are symptomatic. Obviously, symptomatic patients are probably have a much higher viral load and they're going to be at greater risk of exposing. You know, what the CDC said was that if you're vaccinated or not, you can do that isolation for 5 days. But then the next 5 days, you would still be required to be masked when you're out and if you return to work or those kinds of things. So it's still a 10-day quarantine of what you want to do. Again, it's a well-fitting mask. I think there's been a lot of information, again, about cloth masks really probably are no longer acceptable. We should be wearing at least a surgical mask if, you know, you've been exposed and those kinds of things. So I get where the concern and controversy were, but we're not going to want sick people out back at work if they've been exposed or if they have COVID.
Yeah, and you mentioned masks and if the effectiveness of the cloth masks that so many of us wore throughout the course of the pandemic that seemed okay for the previous variants, but with the contagious nature of Omicron, it's just not going to do the trick anymore. So, what is the recommendation? What's the best thing to do?
Well, the absolute best thing to do would be able to have an N95 mask on, especially if you're unvaccinated. Now, again, we know that we don't want to go out and get every N95 mask that's available out there for the general public because, again, we still need those for medical personnel as well. But if there's access to that, that would be your absolute best. A procedural type mask is your next best thing. A lot of people are double masking with surgical masks or with a procedural surgical mask and then maybe a cloth covering over that. You want to do everything you do, but the cloth mask by itself probably is not the best. And again, it goes back, how much do you need to be out and about amongst crowds? Not forgetting that a way to help reduce that risk and mitigation of spread is don't be out if you don't need to be.
Is there any chance we're going to be looking at closures in the future of schools and businesses?
Oh, gosh, you know, I've got two kids in high school right now, and I'm a little nervous come Monday about what's going to happen. Luckily, they do not take their masks off, and they're very good about it. But I think given the infectious nature of this, it really worries me that we're going to see a whole lot more of this. But it really seems like people are trying to see what can we do to not have to close things down again. I am really torn about it. I mean, my medical side of this would be, heck yes, you close, because we need to kind of look from a global standpoint how we stop this, or at least somehow make it less. But again, I totally understand that whole financial and business side of things, that it is very difficult to do this. And we know we're going to live with this for much longer. We hope that it gets less contagious and better, but we still have to be willing to make some changes if we need to for the better good.
Well, are the flu viruses that we see today descendants of the Spanish flu from 1918?
Yeah, very, very distant descendants. You know, always we have influenza A and B. Those are always around and there. But there are subtypes within all of that, and those subtypes change. And that, you know, if you want to kind of look at COVID as being the start of that, very similar to influenza, it's going to continue to evolve and migrate. And we will have various subtypes. The goal is hopefully you get to a subtype that is so benign, it's more like a common cold or it doesn't do anything. But we're definitely not there yet. And that's kind of how influenza evolved and how we deal with influenza now.
You mentioned the global perspective. And obviously, one of the things that is still woefully inadequate is vaccination on a global scale. What are your thoughts on the way to attack that from a global perspective?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing. You know, for us, it's easy because we're here in the United States. We have been very fortunate because we have vaccine availability, and access to it. this virus isn't going to stop until that availability and access is available globally. Obviously, Omicron came from South Africa. If your vaccination rates in other countries aren't there and the transmissibility and the infectious nature of it is going to be the way Omicron is, until everywhere has appropriate herd immunity or vaccination, we won't get past this. So as much as sometimes we get very monocular in our vision as, well, in the United States, here's where we are, but we got to have that everywhere before we're going to make a difference.
It is 1:20 at KRWG. This is Voice of the Public, back in the new year with Dr. Dolores Gomez, the Chief Medical Officer at Memorial Medical Center. And thanks to Mark Johnson, our engineer, for answering phones and keeping us on the air this afternoon, as always. 575-646-2212 if you have a question for Dr. Gomez or some thoughts regarding the COVID-19 pandemic and where we are after all this time. It seems like there was a statement during the state update about people saying things like, everyone I know has COVID. You know, it seems like everyone, it seems like it's just affecting everyone, every industry, every workplace right now. And, you know, one of those really concerning things is when your medical professionals and your first responders are among those that are being affected by this pandemic in a way that they can't come to work. Was that part of the decision on the on changing the guidance, was to have those people back as soon as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, outside of the ones that are getting ill, we are in a huge healthcare shortage right now, and that's nurses, that's respiratory techs, that's just your primary care techs that are in there. We don't have enough right now. And then if they start to become ill or they test positive, that, you know, the best case scenario would be the asymptomatic positive employee. That really was kind of how do we keep our hospitals open and being able to care for our community, that these changes and these guidances were there. Obviously, best thing to do would be able to stay home for the appropriate amount of time. But we are not in a situation where it's that easy to do.
Did vaccine mandates result in some of the staffing shortages that we see in our healthcare system?
Yes, I think it was a big part of, not a big part, I'm going to say it was a part of it. I think one of the other big parts is having to deal with this, like you stated, going into our third year. It is emotionally trying. It is physically trying. What these healthcare providers have had to do through all of this. People just felt like for their own well-being, they needed to do something else. And I think that has also been a big part of doing this. You know, not feeling like people are listening. It's funny when you look at blogs of different healthcare communities kind of talking about this, where 2 years ago we were praised as healthcare heroes, and now it just feels like you're kind of getting stepped on a little bit. It's hard to do that for 2 years in a row and not have some sense of, is this where I need to be?
Yeah. In terms of, you know, your own personal level of exhaustion, you know, we've talked many times throughout the course of this pandemic. And each time, you know, I wonder, how do you keep going?
Luckily, I have a lot of support, and I have support not just in the hospital setting. I have some absolute fabulous colleagues who I can go and talk to and vent to, and just be able to do that has been great, both from a leadership standpoint, because I have that dual role of being a leader in the hospital as an executive, but I also still do care in the hospital. And so being able to talk to them. And then obviously I'm very lucky because I have an absolute great, large extended family support who, thank goodness, also feel very similar to me. So it's easy to have those conversations, and to be able to do that. And then whatever outlet anybody has, my outlet is running. And so, sometimes I'm tired as heck, but sometimes going out and running just makes a difference.
One of the disturbing things, and this is just from my personal perspective and impression from looking at the daily numbers, following those COVID reports, you know, day in and day out, is that in the last few months, it seems like we've seen a lot more younger people who have died from this illness who did not have underlying conditions. Was that because Delta was more virulent than the previous version of the virus?
Delta was more virulent, definitely, in terms of that, and getting severe disease. Really, as Delta came out, that was after vaccine. I think, again, because there's this perception and that I'm healthy, if I get it, it's just going to be a cold for me. I think I'll be okay, or I'm going to wait my turn, or wait a little longer. Made that difficult for our younger population to say, I don't need this vaccine, I'll be fine. There's been a lot of unfortunate stories that you can hear about that young, healthy person who's been ill. So it goes back to just kind of taking this seriously. It doesn't matter what your age is. And once there is something that could help prevent this, we all need to do our due diligence to go out and do that.
Well, let's talk about vaccines. We know that we still need more people to get vaccinated. How does it look for New Mexico and our region in general in terms of vaccines, in your opinion now?
I feel like we had this awesome uptick right away when the vaccine came out and we had people going out and doing this. And then there was this little plateau within another little quick increase when it was offered to our younger population, our pediatric population. But it's just been a very slow trend up since. Now we are doing better in terms of where we're getting with vaccination within the state. I think at least with one dose, we're at least 80% for at least one dose. But again, we always went back to the herd immunity, and once we get there, but as you continue to have variants, we're probably going to have to be close to the 90s before we even get there with this. So even mm-hmm. though 80 may sound good and having 100% vaccination, closer to that 70% range, we still have a long way to go.
I've even heard quite a few people say they've just kind of banished the term herd immunity from their vocabulary.
Yes.
Let's get to the phone. 575-646-2212 is the telephone number. John is on the line. Hi.
Hello. Last night when I went to bed, I was feeling pretty terrible. Coughing, and then later chills. Well, that only lasted about 3 hours, I guess. But I've been a little concerned. Where do I go to have a quick test?
Well, testing is a good topic that we haven't even touched on yet, because it's now all of a sudden seems quite difficult to get a test when you need one. Go ahead, Dr. Gomez.
Yeah, luckily there's a lot of locations where you can be tested. One of the first places and most primary care providers will have testing in their office or get you somewhere where you can be tested.
Okay.
That would be your first thought. But like what Casey said, right now, because of the numbers that are getting ill, it's a little harder to kind of drive up to places right now and be able to kind of walk in, get your test, or come out to your car and get you tested. But I would absolutely get tested just from what you're describing.
Yeah, even though it was gone by morning, I was still very tired. I still am tired. But okay. And I am fully vaccinated, by the way.
All right, so. John. Well, good for you. And
okay.
Oh, great. Good luck.
And old.
Let us know.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Right,
let us know how you do. All right. Bye-bye now. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. John said he was fully vaccinated. And that has a meaning now, because for anyone who's eligible for a booster shot, that includes that booster shot. And just last week, NMSU announced that it would be requiring booster shots for employees. And I'm even starting to hear talk about now a second booster. Dr. Gomez, do you think we're headed that direction?
I do. With this ever-changing recommendations and guidance that keep happening, the CDC now also has lowered the interval in time between your booster, at least for the Pfizer shots. So for Pfizer now, they're saying at 5 months from your second shot that you got for full vaccination, you should be getting a booster. Moderna still remains at 6 months, and Johnson & Johnson is at 2 months. So you can't use just the 6 month as your numbers. So you've got to know what you got and then when you should get your next one.
Well, and I wanted to talk about those specific vaccines as well, because eventually doctors said, you know, get the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine. So for someone who got a J&J, should they go back and do the full course of one of the other two vaccines?
Yeah, so that isn't being recommended. So if you got the Johnson & Johnson, they aren't recommending that you go get another full course of one of the two-shot regimens. There has been a little bit of the thought of mixing and matching, that you may get some benefit from that. So if you did have the Johnson & Johnson, you may want to consider getting the Pfizer. But I would definitely not refuse a vaccine if it's not the one that you're expecting. Get the booster, whatever is available, definitely do that. If you have the opportunity to mix and match, especially if you've got the Johnson & Johnson, then do that. But don't not get it, depending on what they're offering.
Well, that's what I got the Pfizer originally, and I signed up for a Moderna booster because by that time they were saying Moderna maybe had a little more staying power, and it didn't matter if you mixed and matched those two along the way. So, and that is the one that got me a little bit symptomatic, actually. I did fine with the Pfizer, but then a lot of people are saying, oh, the booster got me, whereas the other two didn't. Are at this point now, so many months, you know, a year after vaccines have become more widely available, are we seeing any change in terms of how safe they are for people?
Obviously, from the start, I will say these vaccines have all been very safe. Even in the side effects that you did hear about with any of them, the side effects, if you compared it to the general population and having the same thing happen outside of a vaccine, was probably pretty equal. So the concerns about clots, myocarditis and those kinds of things were very, very low. So they are extremely safe. They always have been. And I don't think we're necessarily seeing a whole lot of an increase in other side effects with them. So again, a vaccine is very different than a medication that you take on a regular basis. If you're going to have a side effect, it's going to happen very shortly after receiving the vaccine. And any long-term effect is going to happen at most at 45 days.
All right, back to the phone now. It is almost 1:32, and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call with your questions for Dr. Dolores Gomez, the Chief Medical Officer from Memorial Medical Center. Paula, welcome to Voice of the Public. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Well, what's on your mind?
I wondered about the vaccine for pregnant women. My daughter is pregnant and doesn't want to get boosted. She's been vaccinated, and I was wondering if there was any information on that.
Let me just ask the question back. So she got the vaccine outside of her pregnancy, and now she's pregnant and thinking about the booster?
Right, and does not want to get the booster. Yes.
Okay. All right. So a lot of times that's always my first thing is, you know, what's changed your mind in terms of that? The absolute good news is that pregnant women receiving these vaccines does not increase any risk to the pregnancy. I would say that if you don't get vaccinated while you're pregnant, the chance that you could become more ill during your pregnancy is probably a greater risk. And when you get sick, that baby is affected as well. So just like anything that we do, we want to protect the baby. And I get that they're worried that is the vaccine going to do something. I will tell you the harm of getting the infection during pregnancy is probably much outweighs that risk if you just go ahead and get the vaccine. And there is data behind that now, which is awesome. So I would encourage her, please, 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 to get that vaccine. Go talk to her provider. And I hope that they're giving her the same message.
I hope so, too. Is there a way I can get a recording of this to play it for her?
Paula, we always post our show within a half hour or so to our website, krwg.org, so you can go listen anytime.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And best of luck to you and your daughter. And at 575-646-2212, we have Charlie on the line. Good afternoon, Charlie. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fine, and that's kind of the reason I'm calling. I have had both shots and then the booster, but I had it about 3 months ago, the booster. And I've been seeing stuff on the internet where after about 10 weeks or 3 months, the effectiveness wanes. And so I was wondering, you mentioned earlier about a second booster, but I was calling about that time. So
I think we drifted away from the topic pretty quickly, actually, Charlie, so I'm glad you brought us back around.
That's what I kind of thought based on what I was hearing. But basically my question is, should I be calling places and annoying clinics, hospitals, and that sort of thing to get a second booster? To basically boost a reboost, so to speak.
So I would say don't start calling yet. What you're talking about, yes, there's some data now coming out of Israel. Israel has been kind of one of our mainstays of going to because they did so well with vaccination. And so they had a good amount of population to be able to kind of report out as things have moved forward. It is looking like a second booster may be necessary. But right now, at least I will say here, the CDC, FDA have not weighed in on that yet. When it does, I think it's going to be very similar to what we've seen when the first booster was recommended. It's going to be high-risk populations first, immune compromised, and then it'll kind of phase through after that. But we're not quite there yet, but the data is looking like, yes, we will probably need boosters moving forward. Again, it may be closer to that 5-month interval as well.
Okay, I'm in my 70s, so I was wondering, I should probably just consider myself pretty vulnerable to this virus now, even though I've had all the shots, because of what they've said. Basically, it wanes, and it wanes pretty fast, is what I understand.
Well, and there was another thing we were hearing, in this discussion was whether we knew yet that the fourth shot wouldn't have a reverse effect on the immune system. Is the science settled on this yet?
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet. I think we're still a little early in knowing kind of what is that going to mean if we do a second booster or a third booster, or if it becomes very similar to the flu shot, where maybe you are doing something every year or every 6 months. So we're not quite there yet, and I think that's why that recommendation hasn't come out yet. Again, we want to vet this as well as we can. We want the information available to us. We see a lot of stuff coming from other countries, but right now that hasn't been set yet here in the United States.
You have an N95, Charlie?
Yes, well, that's what I was going to say. I should probably consider myself then basically as vulnerable as I was before we got vaccines, and N95 and 6-foot distance and all of that. I have one other question, if I can.
Go ahead.
It was a question I've actually asked on this program before, but back in March of 2020, had everybody worn, and this is a thought experiment, had everybody actually worn a N95 mask, or actually a cloth mask, I think, at that time, and had maintained 6-foot distance, would we really have this problem now?
No, but the answer is moot.
Here's something. If for example the next booster becomes makes things worse, then we're kind of back in the same, at least for those of us that have gotten vaccinated. But isn't effectively a vaccine basically maintaining a 6-foot distance and an N95 mask? If enough people do it. Wouldn't that function effectively as a vaccine?
Well, they're tools of prevention, right?
They're tools of prevention, but I'm saying the closer you got, again, this is the thought, to everybody wearing a mask, and I'm in Texas, so a mask mandate is like forbidden, but if there was a real mask mandate, I mean, these things, particularly the Omicron, goes by pretty fast. I mean, you get it, and, you know, they're talking 5 days now. And if you don't have any symptoms, you can... So, I mean, maybe in a month, if everybody really did it, could this thing be over?
I think that is definitely something that we could make a huge difference on. I think going back to what we were talking about globally, though, if you're not doing that
everywhere,
we're not going to get there. And so vaccine is going to be a big way to help if you continue to see variants that are going to happen. But we got to make this happen everywhere, not just in our little niche, which is Doña Ana, New Mexico, United States. It needs to grow.
Okay, but just again, if you got everybody in the world wearing a N95 mask and mask mandates, then conceivably that could end it, right? Or not? Don't know.
Yeah, probably don't know 100%. It would make a big difference. I think that other preventive measures like having a vaccine that can continue to mitigate, I think, is important as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just walking around any given place, whether there's a mask mandate or not, there's enough evidence that that's a pretty tall order, Charlie. So, but you stay safe, and thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a good one. It is 1:40. This is Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. This is KC Counts along with Dr. Dolores Gomez, the Chief Medical Officer at Memorial Medical Center, who jumped in to join us today when our originally scheduled guest fell under the weather and lost his voice. So we look forward to speaking with Dr. Edward Michelson of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center at some point in the future. Let's move on to new treatments. What exciting news that we received in the last few weeks, that there were two different oral medications that had such, you know, significant impact on serious illness and hospitalization potentially, although it's not easy to come by, right?
Oh, yeah, that's always the tough part. You got something out there, everyone's going to be very excited about it, but its availability is probably going to be limited for some time until they can make more. So there are two oral agents that are available now for use. One is called Paxlovid and the other is Molnupiravir that are available. Couple of caveats that do need to be known, and I'll tell you a little bit from a state. The state just put out some guidance in terms of who will be getting these medications. The first big thing with these is they have to be given within 5 days of starting symptoms. So you have to, kind of similar to like if you've had the flu, the treatment's going to work. You have to get it quickly, number one. Number two, with the medication, it's not going to be recommended for somebody like for post-exposure prophylaxis, or you just know that you're positive but you're not symptomatic. It's not recommended yet in that. And what the state is going to do, the state's going to be allocated the medication, and then there's going to be like a symptom scoring system and a risk scoring system to say who should be getting this. Again, those most vulnerable should be the ones getting it, and that isn't just those that have underlying medical conditions. It's also our most vulnerable populations. So it's going to be in those underserved areas. We know our Black population, our Hispanic population, our Native American population are at greatest risk for this virus and getting severe disease. So it's going to be allocated. I will say it's only going to be available in certain pharmacies as well within the city. In Las Cruces, only one pharmacy will have it available. And there's going to be some very specific things. If I have any of my medical community out there listening, when you are prescribing, you will need to risk score. You will need to put the date of onset for this, and the pharmacy is going to be very carefully ensuring that if it's a person that qualifies for this medication, that they should be receiving it, because we are going to be allocated such a small amount.
Do you have any idea what amount that is at this point? Do we have numbers?
We do. Gosh, I have it open on my computer here, if I can find it really quick. But I do know that it's probably only going to start at about, oh gosh, I might quote it very wrong here. Maybe I shouldn't say the number, but it's in the hundreds.
Okay.
Just stating that. So you talked a minute ago about the number of positive cases that we're having right now within the state. We obviously are not going to have enough for everybody. And so that allocation and the importance of who it goes to first is going to be key.
And part of that was that in counties where folks had access to monoclonal antibody treatments, maybe they wouldn't get as much of the oral medications as counties where that monoclonal antibody treatment isn't available. Let's talk about those treatments for a moment, because some are not as effective against Omicron. Is that what we're hearing?
Yeah, exactly. So you're right, Casey. Within the state, too, they looked at about who was going to get this, because there are very small communities that don't have the ability to do the monoclonal antibody, which is given as an IV infusion. So you have to have a location, you have to have staff to be able to give it. What we're seeing with Omicron, we have three different monoclonal antibodies that are available, and it looks like only one really is effective against the Omicron variant, and that's Sotrovimab. So again, the state is going to be very cognizant of that to make sure that more of that is available, because it looks like the Regeneron, which is the Casirivimab, and then the other one, which is Bamlanivimab. They give them such awesome names, or we call it BAM to make it easier, probably aren't as effective against Omicron.
I see. And so did that contribute then to, say, Texas ran out of those treatments in six major cities, including El Paso. And so we find ourselves in this place now where, you know, so that treatment isn't available. The oral treatments maybe not yet available. Maybe our vaccine immunity has worn off and Omicron. I guess the one bright spot is that so far, maybe it doesn't appear to be as deadly.
Yeah, so that is, the one little silver lining that you can say with Omicron, even though it is much more highly infectious than even the Delta variant, which was pretty infectious as well, you may not get as sick. Now, I will put a caveat on that. In that too, is if you're unvaccinated, you're probably still at risk for it, making you ill enough that you end up in the hospital. But if you're vaccinated, we are seeing more breakthrough cases, obviously, with vaccination. But again, it's going to be milder. And so really the biggest thing I always say, prevention is the best way to avoid disease. So if you're waiting for the treatment options, obviously, we just said that there's a lot of treatment options that are out there, but they're not all that great. They are under emergency use authorization. Here you have a virus that has been effective. It's been approved. It is no longer under emergency use authorization. Please get your vaccine. Please get boosted.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call if you have a question for Dr. Dolores Gomez, the Chief Medical Officer at Memorial Medical Center, who is with us today to talk about COVID in our community. And we've had so much territory. We've already covered a lot of territory, but it seems like so much has happened since you were with us last, and that things just continue to change at a very rapid pace. You heard us touch earlier on the new guidelines for isolation and quarantining. And there is a lot to that in terms of the variations of, you know, what you do. For example, these do not apply to K-12 school settings or prison settings and such. So there are some details that you might want to look for depending on your own situation. And you can find that full guidance at krwg.org. It's there on our website. All of the latest information is gathered in one spot there in the top right-hand corner, so you can click there. Of course, the New Mexico Department of Health. I wanted to get back to testing here a little bit, because is there a one best place to go, you know, to get in that funnel for testing? Should we still go to the Department of Health website and get our tests through that outlet?
Yeah, so right now, I think where you can get tested, you should try to do your best. Obviously, the Department of Health has continued to do an outstanding job in trying to make sure that this is happening. There are a lot of labs within Las Cruces and Doniana County where you can go and get tested. I would just say if you can do that, get where you can. Obviously, the other thing with testing, and we've talked about this in the past, about the type of test that you're getting as well. We talked about the one bright lining with Omicron, but Omicron has been a little bit crazy too. A lot of the antigen testing, which is one way to test that is a rapid test and is a big part of the at-home tests that a lot of people are doing, those tests in and of themselves have not had a really great in the epidemiology world. We say they're not great. They're not very sensitive. So you tend to have a lot of false negative results with that. With Omicron, that looks to even be a little bit higher. So don't just use that one test in time. And a lot of times people will say if you test and you've been exposed, you may need to retest within a few days to see if you truly are negative or not. Your best test is a PCR, but that does take a little bit more time to get back, and those are going to be available more in your pharmacy settings, your lab settings, and versus that at-home test that you can do.
If people test at home, have symptoms, say, you know, they have every reason to believe that they have COVID, they take the test, it's positive, do those numbers necessarily get reported?
With the at-home tests, not necessarily unless they come and tell you, because they may not get put in that state system. And that's a big thing, too, is the number of positive tests that we're seeing, which is a very high number in comparison to even just a few weeks ago. It probably is higher because there are people that probably are becoming symptomatic who may be doing an at-home test and not letting people know about that, or they just know, I feel bad and I was exposed, I'm going to stay home and don't get that test. So our numbers probably are higher than what we're seeing.
Seems logical. 575-646-2212, the telephone number for Voice of the Public. And Kim is on the line at 150. Good afternoon, Kim.
Hi. I apologize if this question has been asked. I didn't tune in until later. I'm a season ticket holder for New Mexico State basketball, men's, and a friend of mine is too, and he especially has been very concerned about the lack of mask enforcement in the games, up to and including cheerleaders going up selling raffle tickets. In fact, he, even though he's a season ticket holder, refuses to go any more games. He's concerned about the safety. That's what, leading up to the question, is there any form of enforcement at these games that they should be implementing? There's an announcement once at halftime, but there's no effort to enforce it.
Well, thanks for that, Kim. And that may be a question for someone here at New Mexico State University to answer, because, you know, in general, we have pretty strict guidelines on campus about masking and vaccinations and the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Well, that's what's been so appalling, the lack of that on the games. And this friend has even confronted a couple of people. One person said, I don't have a mask. I'm not wearing a mask. And anyway, it's been pretty concerning. And, talk about a spreader event at the UNM game. It was a pretty, about 7,000 or 8,000 crowd. That looks to me like a real dangerous spread event.
Yeah, certainly. Well, thank you for the call, Kim. And we may have to follow up on that one, but we appreciate your concern, you know,
okay.
And your question.
Well, appreciate any help I can get on it.
Okay, stay safe. You know,
okay.
And that's something that I think a lot of people have been really frustrated about is, you know, do we have a mask mandate or not, and that level of enforcement. So, and just hearing you earlier, Dr. Gomez, say how important it is to even have, you know, a more effective mask now in the face of Omicron.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, for Kim, I'm a season ticket holder as well. I will say I was initially very pleasantly surprised with the number of people that were masked when I first started going to the games. It's not quite as much as it was before, and absolutely correct. I mean, you're in an enclosed environment. You're seated very close to everybody. There is no kind of distancing from that standpoint. Really have to decide, you know, do I keep coming to these games, and what do I do if I'm seeing violations within that? An announcement, you know, one or two times during the game obviously isn't going to do it. And absolutely, we do still have an indoor mask mandate that is in effect.
So it's there. Yeah. Well, maybe some of the powers that be could very well be listening right now and follow up on that, because it's just so important for everyone to try to stay safe as possible. And sports is one of the areas that has been most recently, you know, most affected. I mean, watching the college playoff season, and as it did with so many teams having to drop out, it's just everywhere, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it may come down that they may not have a choice to continue to play games, because you may just not have enough players and staff to be able to do that. I heard just recently, with the Super Bowl coming up, that they're looking for alternative sites, because in California, again, as I think they've done throughout this pandemic, is they've kind of tried to be very strict on what needs to happen in terms of having big events like that, where, you know, they are super spreader events that can happen. But if you don't have the players that can play, and you don't have the staff to help support those players, you may see it go away on its own. It may be a natural closure that happens.
At this point, with the time that we have left, let's talk about what you're seeing, you know, at your hospital on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, what message you would have for the community that you can bring out from those things that you see that a lot of other people just don't get to see. Most other people, really.
I wish people could be a fly on the wall in the hospital, not because I want to violate any HIPAA, but to really see the amount of fatigue, the amount of doing this on a day in, day out basis, feeling like sometimes you're banging your head up against the wall right now. I think the last time I was on, I talked a little bit about that, but I think it's even more so right now. It is very disheartening when we have staff leaving, either to go do travel jobs in places where the numbers are much higher than where we are right now. We're holding on. I will tell you, you know, we've talked a lot about COVID, and I think the last time I was on, I had mentioned that this is not just COVID patients coming in ill that we have to take care of. It's also not being able to take care of those that are non-COVID related, because you don't have staff to take care of ICU patients. You don't have the staff to adequately care for a patient that comes into the emergency room, because you're so inundated right now. I would say too, if you feel a little ill, but not at an emergency need, please don't come to our ER. Those providers too are so overworked right now. Find a way to get tested elsewhere. We are not the site just to get tested. If you're sick, we're going to do everything we can. But people are tired. It is frustrating. It is not uncommon to run into somebody every day who is in the corner upset and angry. I think we all have this anger, and that's not a feeling you ever want to have as a healthcare provider, where you should never feel that way towards a patient or towards anybody, but that's what we're seeing right now. And if that makes any difference to anybody out there, to get you vaccinated or to get that booster, I hope you can hear that. I hope you can hear that urgency in our voice and that pleading that we have to you to do what you can to make a difference right now.
Well, obviously overwhelmed hospitals are dangerous to all of us. So, you know, for that person who has an emergency, a medical emergency, and goes to the emergency room and is forced to wait for a far longer amount of time than would be not even ideal, but nor under normal circumstances, you know, what are patients encountering when they come to the emergency room?
It's a scary sight. I mean, you walk in and you know, we talk about, you know, you don't want to put people together with those that may have COVID versus those that don't. But when all you have is a very small location do that, that's what you're forced to do in order to provide that care. You would never think you would see that in a first world country, where you would have to worry about that. But that is what we're seeing. And we're seeing that in El Paso. We're seeing that here locally. We're seeing it everywhere. We're not immune from that.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. And 575-646-2212. We thank everyone for chiming in today, for calling with your questions. We know that there are lots of questions as we continue to navigate this pandemic. Behind Omicron, Dr. Gomez, what do you think is next?
Well, again, like we said, we're not seeing this as people getting us sick, but it's going to be here with us for several more weeks because it is spreading so fast. Maybe the other silver lining with it is that hopefully we'll see that this surge is going to go down, in the next few weeks. The only concern is what's going to come next. And I think that is what everybody is waiting for and not really wanting to see, because I don't know if what's next is going to be worse or better. I can only say that we have to just continue to do our due diligence as much as possible. I hope that we're going to see things get better. Always want to stay hopeful from that standpoint. But I challenge everybody out there, please do your part. We are a society of coming together, and we have to do that. We have to quit bickering. We have to quit politicizing. We need to do what's best for everybody, and that would be what I would, I guess, leave everybody with right now.
We touched just briefly earlier on the idea of schools staying open through this, and state health officials even said that the classroom could be the safest place for children right now. Do you agree?
I think until you have the ability to have every age group be vaccinated, be fully vaccinated, I think that's a statement that I don't know if I can agree 100% with, because we know the more we are enclosed in an area, the greater susceptibility we have. I think there are ways that we can try to work through that, but it's going to take the right amount of staff, and teaching hasn't been immune from staff shortages either. If you could make a classroom that has much fewer class participants in it, then I think maybe it could be safe. But right now, with normal class sizes and with staffing shortages, that's going to be a tough task to achieve.
Certainly hoping for the best as we head into the spring semester. And Dr. Gomez, I hope we get to see you again in the coming weeks for another update. And I hope that we have better news for our next one. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you again, Casey.
Intermezzo is coming up next. Leora Zeitlin is off today. NPR News now.